A reading from the Gospel according to Matthew. Then the mother of the sons of Zebedee approached Jesus with her sons and did him homage, wishing to ask him for something. He said to her, "What do you wish?" She answered him, "Command that these two sons of mine sit, one at your right and the other at your left, in your kingdom." Jesus said in reply, "You do not know what you are asking. Can you drink the cup that I am going to drink?" They said to him, "We can." He replied, "My chalice you will indeed drink, but to sit at my right and at my left, this is not mine to give, but is for those for whom it has been prepared by my Father." When the ten heard this, they became indignant at the two brothers. But Jesus summoned them and said, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and the great ones make their authority felt. But it shall not be so among you. Rather, whoever wishes to be great among you shall be your servant." I came upon her the morning after along the riverbank, beating the last remnants of dirt and color out of a thin piece of cloth with a rock and then rinsing them downstream. I'd heard from Mark that her name was Salome, but I didn't dare address her by her first name, for she was a very traditional woman, wedded to Zebedee and the culture of her time, so she didn't really have a name and thought that appropriate. When I spotted her, even from a distance, I'd recognized I'd seen her before. Or no, maybe she just looked like someone else I knew. Well, you know, come to think of it, she looked kind of like Mary of Nazareth. And maybe the old Apocrypha really was true, and they were sisters, which would make a little more sense as to why she'd been so brazen yesterday, going up to Jesus like that and asking that her two sons, and hers only, be seated at Jesus' right and left hand in the kingdom. If they were related, well, again, it would only be appropriate. It wasn't that she didn't want to see changes. Oh, she did. You could hear it in the cracking of one rock against the other and the vigor with which she wrung excess water from the twisted garment. She despised the Romans like all of her neighbors. She despised the corruption of her own people's leaders, the extortion and wastefulness more befitting foreigners than those set apart to be a light to the nations. She was one who had waited in sincere hope for the coming of the Messiah, who would set her people free, while so many of the religious leaders in Jerusalem only gave the aspiration lip service. And Jesus had that magnetic charisma, that born leader quality that could make it happen. Hadn't she been one of the first to spot it? And when others had scoffed, what good could come from Nazareth, really a carpenter's son? Hadn't she defended him before the naysayers? Hadn't she encouraged her sons to go with him, even if it meant that she and Zebedee were left alone for long periods of time in their old age? Was it really too much to ask that her Jimmy and Johnny get key positions in the coming administration? Isn't it only appropriate that those roles should go to people who've been with you from the very beginning? But things had not gone the way she'd planned. No, not at all. She'd waited for what she thought was just the right moment to make the ask, but then, instead of a simple yes, Jesus answered, well, he didn't answer her, that's for sure. It was like she wasn't even there. And then all hell broke loose. Her sons were shamed, and Jesus' band of men started arguing with one another. And she slunk away without anyone noticing, and now even her sons weren't talking to her. "Woman," their eyes seemed to say, "what'd you go and do that for?" After a while, she threw the garment into a bucket and sat back on her haunches, elbows resting on knees, staring into the river. And I was afraid she might turn around and see me, and if that happened, I wouldn't be quite sure what to say. So I was considering slinking off myself when I noticed that Jesus was drawing near her and also squatting down alongside her. "Auntie," he said. She rose to her full height of 5'2" and turned to look down on him, her eyes flashing with anger and hurt. "I don't understand you. We have been without any power over our lives for so long, and you could change that. You could make things different for us." "Auntie," he said again, "you want to work the system, and I want to break the system. You want to keep the game and just change the players. I want to rewrite the rules of the game. Well, what is stopping you? I'm waiting. I've been waiting for a long time for the world to be different. Well, certainly the guys over there are not the quickest of learners, as I needed to explain to them again yesterday. But quite frankly, Auntie, one of the things is that people like you are also making it difficult. Me, she exclaimed with outrage. Me, I am an old woman who has worked hard her whole life and have not a shekel to show for it. I'm entirely dependent on my husband and two grown sons to take care of me, and those sons are currently unemployed, apparently with dim future prospects. And how can I be the problem? I am not even allowed a name. My point precisely, he said. The system is stacked against you, but it only works if you agree to keep it working. And how do I agree to keep it working? By assenting to the fact that power is to be feared and that others call the shots. By agreeing that titles mean something and people are to be treated differently when they have one. By consenting that your basic needs can only be met via your sons. By assuming that when you are ordered to do something, the only available response is yes. By sulking away and allowing your anger swallowed rather than speaking it. By not saying anything when you see something unfair. By not demanding that you have your own name. When you do these things, whether you mean to or not, you are keeping the system alive and well. But not to do so, she said, is very dangerous, and I want to survive. Well, he said, now we arrive at the truth. You see, I honestly would rather die than do those things. Don't say it, she said. Auntie, do not worry. I will show you how to do it right. She looked confused. I wondered if she would stay with him now that her hopes had been dashed and her world rocked. I wondered if maybe she might just leave James and John to their own fate and retire to the comfort of Zebedee's protection for her remaining days. But as Jesus walked away, something of a smile crossed her face, even as a tear rolled down from the corner of her eye. And then I knew where I'd seen her before. At the tomb, on the third day. She's one of those Easter morning women with love, more powerful than darkness. And courage strong enough to confront soldiers and rocks three times her size.